This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Yes, it's an incredibly high number. Last week we had stormy conditions on the Mediterranean. That weather cleared by Friday. So fine conditions meant that the number of people making that dangerous journey on the water from Libya to Europe really skyrocketed. And we saw 2,000 rescues on Friday, an incredible 4,500 on Saturday, and another 2,000 on Sunday.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. We'll have the full story coming up.
Also, a U.S. senator visiting South Sudan calls the humanitarian crisis there a worrying tragedy. The Red Cross looks into finding ways to improve humanitarian assistance for Africa. And Zimbabwe celebrates 37 years of independence tomorrow.
We'll have these stories and more for you, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story: about 8,500 migrants were rescued on the Mediterranean Sea over the weekend in multiple operations. The Italian Coast Guard says seven bodies were also recovered yesterday. To date, over 30,000 migrants have entered Italy this year. Well over 600 have died trying to make the Mediterranean crossing this year. Reporter Josephine McKenna has the latest on the rescue operations and reaction to the ongoing migration.
Yes, it's an incredibly high number. Last week we had stormy conditions on the Mediterranean. That weather cleared by Friday. So fine conditions meant that the number of people making that dangerous journey on the water from Libya to Europe really skyrocketed. And we saw 2,000 rescues on Friday, an incredible 4,500 on Saturday, and another 2,000 on Sunday. So these rescue vessels were a combination of the Italian Coast Guard, Italian Navy, and NGOs that went to the aid of those migrants who were crammed onto rubber dinghies and rickety wooden boats just off the coast of Libya. So quite an incredible operation, and the Coast Guard obviously said to me that they were very, very committed and very involved and very busy over this Easter weekend.
Did they confirm any deaths from these rescues?
Well, we have seen media reports, particularly from a Reuters photographer, who suggested that there were 20 bodies in the water, including the body of an 8-year-old boy. Now, the Italian Coast Guard was unwilling to confirm that number because so many operations were underway in different parts of the Mediterranean. But the Coast Guard did confirm that seven bodies had been found on Sunday. So that's another tragedy there, and still unclear whether that number may increase. No operations today because the water has become quite choppy again. It looks like a quiet day so far, but many of these migrants now are being brought to Italian ports. A German vessel has brought more than 1,000 migrants to Catania. Another 1,200 are expected in the Sicilian port of Messina this afternoon, and 450 others were taken to another port in Sicily. So massive numbers of migrants, and really raising questions about whether this agreement between Italy and Libya is really going to be very effective in stopping the people smugglers.
I understand there's been reaction from Italy's anti-immigrant parties. What are they saying?
The anti-immigrant Northern League, which has been very vocal against the influx of migrants into Italy, has already been speaking out. The leader of that party, Matteo Salvini, has been on his Facebook page this morning saying, "People are angry, and I'm one of them." He said, "We are at our limit. Too many illegal migrants. They should all be going home." He said, "Too much stress on Italians, and more attention needed to be on Italians." And that's certainly the sort of message that we're also seeing from Marine Le Pen, the head of the anti-immigrant National Front party in France. And no doubt she will be capitalizing on this influx that we've seen at the weekend, leading into critical French elections that are going to take place on April the 23rd in France, where migration is also a top issue in those elections.
Do you think this could possibly lead to any type of protest or demonstrations?
Well, it's difficult difficult to say. As you know, in Italy, really slows down over Easter. Whether we're going to see a reaction is a little unclear. Most people are away on vacation, having a day off. I think the full impact of this influx really hasn't been appreciated yet. But the government has introduced new measures and new migrant processing centres that are going to be set up in different parts of Italy with a view to repatriating, removing migrants that don't have legitimate political asylum. I think certain Italians are going to be impatient to see some sort of government action if we continue to see this massive influx. We've already seen around 30,000 arrivals since the beginning of January, and we're just at the beginning of the summer season. So it's really going to test a lot of people's patience here in a country where unemployment is very high and there's still a great deal of economic crisis.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
In related news, a group of Africans living in Europe visited Cameroon this week to launch a campaign against illegal migration. Moki Edwin Kinzeka is in Yaoundé with this story.
This group is called No More Deaths in the Desert or on the Sea. Its mission is simple: to educate youth in Africa about the harsh realities of illegal migration.
We want to tell them that all the information the people give them before they start their journey are wrong.
The group's leader, Sylvine Nancha, was born in Cameroon. She has lived in the German town of Freiburg for 25 years. She arrived as a student and rose to become the town's first counselor of African descent.
I made a lot of interviews last year with Africans, and they told me that when they started the journey, they thought that the journey will take them maybe just 2 weeks, but they were 1 year or 2 years or 3 years on their way to Europe, and they spent more than 10,000 euros. They had other wrong information, like if you arrive, we will give you a job, and they arrived in Italy, in Spain, or in Germany, and they don't have a job.
Of course, those are the migrants who survived the crossing. The International Organization for Migration reported that more than 5,000 people died in 2016 in the Mediterranean. That's a 35% increase from deaths the previous year. Nancha joined forces with 9 other Africans living across Europe to tackle the trend. They plan to visit Nigeria, Kenya, Ghana, Niger, Algeria, and Libya by the end of this year to screen a film based on Nancha's interviews with migrants. Hundreds of people gathered at each of the 3 screenings in Yaoundé this week. The goal of the film is to deter illegal migration. But youth at the event told VOA they know the risk already. Some of them said a lack of jobs and Europe's restrictive immigration policies leave few options.
C'est pas besoin d'un film aujourd'hui, c'est plusieurs films déjà. Mais je pense que
24-year-old Ngenang Bruno says films alone will not stop Africans who believe that the only way for them to make it in the future is to sacrifice and cross the desert and sea to Europe. He says the will to live is strong and it will take work to change that. The young people in the audience cited stories of people they know who made it to Europe illegally. But in Yaoundé, it is not hard to find other Cameroonians who failed. 29-year-old Robert Alain Lipoti cleans dishes in his restaurant at Etudi neighborhood. His uncle loaned him the money to start his business after Alain returned from his sad adventure across the desert trying to make it to the Mediterranean. He says he ran short of food and water when he spent 3 weeks trekking in the Sahara Desert. He says he saw people dying by him and there was nothing he could do to help. He says while in the town of Damara in Algeria, he had to escape police and then he trekked many kilometers to Morocco where he couldn't go out in public or walk because his stay was illegal. Despite the difficulties, VOA spoke to returnees who say they will try to migrate again. 35-year-old Milingi Bia Paul made it to Algeria but was scammed out of his money. He had to take odd jobs to raise transport fare to go home.
Le Cameroun entier les jeunes, vous voyez un peu.
He says Cameroon, like other African countries, buries young people's talents. He says after finishing their studies, people still do not have jobs. He says why should he dream to stay in Cameroon when there are opportunities outside? Paul hasn't ruled out trying to make the crossing again. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
A U.S. senator visiting South Sudan calls the humanitarian crisis there a worrying tragedy. Democrat Christopher Coons of the eastern state of Delaware traveled to Gonyil. Reporter Wake Simon Wudu has the story.
A group of children welcomed Democratic Party Senator Christopher Coons and his team to the rebel-controlled area of Gonyil, where hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese depend on help from aid agencies. It's the first visit to South Sudan for Senator Coons, who serves as the ranking Democrat on the House Subcommittee for African Affairs. Coons wants to familiarize himself with U.S.-funded projects aimed at combating hunger and health problems in the former Unity State. The senator from the small east coast state of Delaware says he was shocked to learn that the entire population of Gonyil depends on humanitarian agencies for food.
It seems to me that as the conflict widens here in South Sudan, the risk of large-scale disaster, of famine, and of widespread hunger gets greater and greater. There are real logistical challenges to providing famine relief here in Unity State and throughout the country. The place we are right now, there are no roads, really, to get here. So all of the equipment, all of the staff, and all of the food relief has to be delivered by air. And unless the conflict reduces and resolves, I think there will be greater and greater famine, hunger, and risks to human health and safety across the country.
The U.S. lawmaker also visited a refugee camp in neighboring Uganda, which hosts tens of thousands of South Sudanese who fled the violence at home. Coons says he will brief other U.S. lawmakers about the critical importance of foreign aid funding in places like South Sudan when he returns home. U.S. President Donald Trump's proposed budget would slash foreign funding by three quarters, a move that would affect hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese dependent on U.S. aid for food and shelter. Coons plans to speak up for South Sudan in Congress.
I know that we will have to make stronger arguments for why particular U.N. missions and particular countries should remain a priority. South Sudan currently has the largest and most difficult refugee problem in the entire continent of 54 countries. There are millions of South Sudanese displaced within South Sudan and who have fled to Ethiopia, to DRC, and to Uganda. I think it should remain a priority, but there will be some difficult negotiations between Congress, where I serve, and the Trump administration.
Coons urged South Sudanese leaders to find workable solutions to the conflict, which is entering its fourth year. He says the international community is struggling to help 60 million refugees across the world, but he sees South Sudan as a country whose people are in dire need of assistance.
I am gravely worried that this conflict continues to expand and to deepen and to threaten the very health and safety of millions of South Sudanese. This is not a time to assume that the United States will always be present and will always provide support. I think that makes it an urgent time for the leaders of South Sudan to find a peaceful resolution to the widening violence and conflict of this country.
Panyajar County hosts nearly 200,000 people, including internally displaced persons who fled to the area from Mayendit and Elier, two counties hit by famine. Most families in Panyajar are battling drought and insecurity. Michael Loth, coordinator of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Panyajar, says nevertheless, families continue to seek refuge in Panyajar, where 8 agencies are providing assistance.
The people who are coming from Southern Unity are facing harassment during the fighting there in Leir Mandit. So upon arrival here, there are a lot of challenges. Food shortages is a problem, water shortages, and adequate medical care in the area. The children who came with IDPs together are all minority.
Speaking in his native Nuer language, Panyajar County Commissioner John Tapp says he has one message he wants Senator Kunz to deliver to the Trump administration. Tapp says the Obama administration was not serious about resolving the South Sudan conflict. He says even if the U.S. government continues to give millions of U.S. dollars for humanitarian aid, but there is no peace in the country, the money is useless. He wants the Trump administration to resolve the South Sudan problems once and for all by restoring peace so that people who fled to neighboring countries can finally return home. The U.S. government is the biggest donor to the South Sudanese people. Since the outbreak of the conflict in late 2013, the U.S. has contributed at least $1 billion toward humanitarian work in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick, and at 22 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. About 8,500 migrants rescued on the Mediterranean Sea at the weekend in multiple operations. South Sudan's army denies killing at least 14 civilians last week in the northwestern town of Raja. And the Red Cross looks at ways to improve humanitarian assistance for Africa. For more news and information, you're welcome to visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Zimbabwe celebrates 37 years of independence tomorrow. Reporter Kudzai Zvinovashi reviews what this means to ordinary Zimbabweans.
In 1980, Zimbabwe's independence marked an end to a bloody war against white minority rule. Takura Zhangaza is an independent political analyst based in Harare.
Well, I think to an ordinary person, it invokes memory of the liberation struggle and the values and principles that were supposed to be espoused in its aftermath.
Zhangaza explains some of the things that were expected after independence.
When you get independence, you fought for something. What was it? Democracy, the right to vote, economic justice. So people tend to think about whether those things have been achieved and at what stage are they.
Mukudzei Majoni is a young Zimbabwean. He explains what the day means to him.
Oh, it means absolutely nothing now. It used to mean something, but now it just means another year of, you know, nothingness, lost opportunities, another year of, you know, struggling economically. If there's no jobs on the horizon, it's just going to be another year of frustration.
Zhangaza echoes Majoni's views.
So there's generally ambiguity about what it really means for the everyday citizen, because a good number might not feel those values and those principles and those objectives have been fulfilled. Some might feel they're a work in progress. But generally there's ambivalence and ambiguity about the full import of independence.
The liberation struggle meant sacrifices from the black majority and resulted in the loss of tens of thousands of lives. Zhangaza says Independence Day is honored through the country, even though many expectations have not been fulfilled.
There is definite appreciation of the liberation struggle and the processes that led to independence.
Dr. Prosper Chitambara is a senior researcher at the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe. He says many Zimbabweans expected an era of prosperity.
A lot actually has happened since independence. There have been far-reaching changes to the structure of the economy. The economy has actually experienced a lot of deindustrialization. Right now, actually, 94.5% of the labor force is informally employed.
As a result, the cost of living is high, and critics say freedom of speech and other human rights are not respected. They say independence failed to fulfill the promises of employment, equal opportunities, free and fair elections, and other aspects of democracy. Jankaja says, with continuous lobbying, young people might help realize the fruits of the liberation struggle. While Chitambara says, the country needs drastic measures that will shock the economy back to life. To mark Independence Day, the government has planned a day of celebration with parades and live musical performances. President Mugabe will light the symbol of independence, the eternal flame. The opposition, Movement for Democratic Change, says they applaud the liberation struggle and regret that the legacy has been tainted, in their view, by Mugabe government. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Wagner Roberts, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Africa, this is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impuga, host of Reporters Roundtable. Join us this week as we discuss the corruption in Africa. I'll have a panel of journalists and analysts this Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.